Hello, friends. We are beginning now with Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, and now we have reached Part 7. I think we're really beginning on page 63. It will not be a long program because there are other broadcasts coming up. DK has given us a meditation, kind of a one that has combined three individual requirements and three group requirements for real progress. He's kind of outlining the stages here. But from another point of view, he is giving us a meditation, which ends with the well-known words, and I think they were originally in the Hebrew, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be always acceptable in thy sight, O soul, my Lord and my Redeemer. And sometimes it is written, O Lord, my rock and my Redeemer. So this will be the beginning of program number 28. And we'll go on for a while and see how we can do. Yeah. So Part 7, and immediately he gets into the need for telepathic sensitivity in every group. So these are his words. The need for telepathic sensitivity in every group, composed of disciples, I suppose, may I say, not just aspirants, but a real disciple, and a real disciple has certainly taken the first initiation. So is based, he says, on three necessities, and I would like you to understand this more clearly. So number one, the first necessity for this need for telepathic sensitivity. Number one, he says, the cultivation of an interrelation of a telepathic nature upon the mental plane is essential. The cultivation of an interrelation of a telepathic nature upon the mental plane is essential. You know, when we read the book Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle, we find that there are many kinds of telepathy. Etheric, emotional, but also mental telepathy and soul telepathy. And I wonder if that's what he means here. He goes on to say, this has always been an established fact, or condition in the case of a master and his disciple. And between the senior disciples in any group of accepted disciples. So let us say that behind the scenes, this has worked out and the master is communicating telepathically with the soul of the group member concerned. And senior disciples, well, whatever they are they accepted disciples or even beyond that range? Let's just say they have this telepathic sensitivity as well. DK goes on to say, the time has now come when this group quality must, for the sake of a needy world, be developed by disciples of lesser attainment in the group. And let's say that that is interesting, because what may have even been a little difficult for the senior disciples is now required of the lesser disciples, maybe those who have made their pledge, the accepting disciples who have made their pledge but are not yet accepted disciples. And the motive, let us say, as always, is world need, humanity's need. I would say that one only has to check the news feeds of today to realize what a serious state of difficulty humanity finds itself in. It's like nobody wants to read the good news, and the news channels are filled with often horrible news of human suffering. So anyway, the first statement about telepathy, that upon the mental plane, it is a great requirement. The second statement from the Tibetan, this telepathic unfoldment will lead to greater sensitivity to others. And let me say that DK has certainly emphasized in the foregoing pages the entire factor of sensitivity, what it is, what it isn't. It's certainly not the idea of being personally touchy and thin-skinned. It has to do with a real and deep understanding of another in their soul nature. Well, anyway, DK has said, this telepathic unfoldment will lead to a greater sensitivity to others. And then he goes on, this is the secret of a master's work, and the factor which enables him to work through his disciples, using them as outposts of his consciousness. Well, every time, may I say that every time we have a pre-full moon, let's say, and we follow the golden path into the indigo sun, we are preparing to some degree to become outposts of the master's consciousness as we begin to encounter the planetary qualities and solar systemic qualities and constellational qualities. We do it somewhat as if the master's consciousness underlay our own. And that's a good practice, I think. Excuse me. So this telepathic unfoldment holds the secret and allows the master to, as it were, enter the soul consciousness of his disciples and support that consciousness. And they, the disciples, and the group as a whole feel supported by his presence. Okay, so we've reached the point where we're considering the disciples and the discipleship group as potential outposts of the master's consciousness. D.K. goes on to say, to do this with exactitude, he must be able to know their condition, mental, psychical, and physical. And may I interpolate that the psychical condition is here the astral conditioning. It's not using the word, I think, in the higher sense to denote the soul. So, repeating, it says here that he must be able to know their condition, mental, psychical, and physical, when he chooses so to know. Which, may I add, is not, you know, every moment of the day or night. He leaves many things to the disciple himself or herself, and then when necessity demands, he can zero in and learn of the condition and learn with exactitude. And okay, this goes on, the text goes on to say, he can thus discover whether they are available or not for any specific service. I have to interpolate that sometimes Alice Bailey, for all of her tremendous work, had a mind too filled with lower manas to be used on that particular occasion, because DK was not speaking to her lower manas, but to something higher. So the master can discover, are you available for any specific service when he chooses so to do? And going on, whether they can be safely used or not, may I say, either for themselves or for the work, so whether they can be safely used or not, and whether their sensitivity is such that their interpretation of what they sense is of sufficient accuracy, so they will respond intelligently to the need. And then he says, have I not had to study all of you in this way? Think this out, he says, and ponder upon the implications. Well, what we're learning here is that the master at will can, yes, if he so chooses, place himself in telepathic rapport with any student that he chooses to gather around himself at the periphery of the ashram, or really any student that he is focusing upon, even if the time to be gathered into groups of accepted disciples has not yet come for that student. So Master DK is putting on alert all of his students to let them know that they have been studied as to their usefulness, because they are not necessarily always useful. Such may be a condition within their personality which they have allowed, which militates against their usefulness. So the master is not out to begin something at a great disadvantage and without even the likelihood of success. Then we might say, behind our efforts, the master's consciousness abides and can be activated in our direction according to his will. Wouldn't we say that kind of puts us on the alert, doesn't it? And is an incentive for us to sustain our usability. We're looking through some comments regarding the need for telepathic sensitivity. And why? Because there are some necessities which only telepathic sensitivity of a reasonably effective kind will answer. There are some necessities which will only be accomplished if there is a sufficient degree of telepathic sensitivity. So we've looked at two of them. The necessity for telepathic work on the mental plane, and also greater sensitivity and exact knowledge of the condition of the disciple. I think, may I say, surely beyond what AAB's knowledge was. Probably she was fairly surprised on occasion by DK's assessment. And then number three, this telepathic sensitivity will also lead to the new science of intercommunication, which in the new age will reach general use and comprehension of this condition. The radio is the outer symbol, and now, may I say, we have methods of communication which are symbolized outwardly by much more sophisticated apparatus. The new science of intercommunication. And that's going to be a necessity which only telepathic sensitivity can make possible. So, there is a need for telepathic sensitivity. It is based on three necessities. One necessity is that mental telepathy within the group is essential. Another necessity is that there be greater sensitivity within the group and between the disciples and the master. And another necessity that there be developed a new science of intercommunication. Well, do we not seem to be always coming closer? When I think of the radio, even FDR's fireside chats, the families gathered around those old wooden boxes that we call the radio. And when you think of how the communication can now take place via video and through live interviews and all of the sophistication that we now have, there has been a tremendous progress. Did Master DK foresee this? Well, it's hard to say, isn't it? But knowing his extended foresight, perhaps a certain degree of it. Now we go on with the text. Certain questions now arise, and it might be well to formulate the answers to some of them. He says further, it could be wisely asked if anyone has the right to work telepathically upon the mind of any person. And he says, the answer is that you are doing it all the time, consciously or unconsciously, and without skill or purpose, or if there is a purpose, it is usually a personality purpose. So, in fact, we learn that we are much more telepathic than we may have estimated. And we are always exchanging telepathically the conditions found within our personality. And increasingly found within our mind or minds. We go on with his statements. It is through telepathy that ideas have been disseminated in the world by the process of mentally impressing the mind of some disciple or sensitive person. Well, we all know we have received ideas. Maybe we haven't known where they've come from. But we sometimes say, well, I am impressed by the idea that, and that's part of the dissemination of ideas from on high into our normal type of consciousness. So, I'll repeat this. It is through telepathy that ideas have been disseminated in the world by the process of mentally impressing the mind of some disciple or sensitive person. Now, maybe we say to ourselves, oh, I came up with a good idea. However, we will not have realized that the reason we came up with that idea is that it has been deliberately impressed upon us. So, okay, DK goes on to say, it is then their task to find and direct the mind and activities of those individuals whose task is not only to be responsive to this impression, but to bring it out into the consciousness of the world thinkers. Now, frequently there's a third ray dynamic involved there, helping to externalize an idea. Sometimes we simply know, don't we, that when we receive an idea, it is to be spread about in the right way. Now, DK is asking us something quite important. Have you ever asked yourselves, what are the aspects of the work in connection with telepathy, which raise questions in your mind? Is it not distrust of personality intention or point of view, and a questioning also as to your own sincerity or motives. May I add that not everyone wants the content of their mind to be clearly seen. Could be an embarrassment, could be a humbling or even a humiliation. So this factor of trust based on love is not yet universally available, not by far. Okay. There are times, are there not, when we just don't want to be known, when we want to shut others out because even if they are in the same group, we don't trust them. Now that's a sad commentary upon where we are with our group process. DK goes on to say, unless this work is carried forward selflessly and with complete freedom from personal prejudice and personal choice, in other words, we can't have our mind made up and hope to be sensitive to wider, deeper impressions. So a complete freedom with personal prejudice and personal choices, political or religious. May I say how often those two are linked together? But unless this is the case, there can be no safe work along these lines. So to be involved in the field of love with respect to anyone else with whom we seek to establish telepathic rapport is a necessity. And of course, DK is telling us no safe work. What might be some of the factors inhibiting safety? One of the factors, I think, is the tendency to want to be so influential that one takes over another person's mind and begins to direct them in directions which are to the advantage of the impressor and not the impressed. So repeating what DK says here, unless this work is carried forward selflessly and with complete freedom from personal prejudice and personal choices, political or religious, there can be no safe work along this line. May I say that this begins to touch on the question of ashramic intimacy and the degree to which we begin to know each other and trust that process. So no safe work unless. And DK goes on to say, that is why I emphasize to you the need for doing this work at the highest point of highest united point of meditation and with complete obedience to my decisions in the matter. Well, DK is never forcing the issue, but he certainly is very strongly suggesting a rigorous form of occult obedience. We have to carry things out just the way the master says, and with exactitude. And that's why, may I say, that the detail of this book is meant to be studied meticulously and even holistically with meticulous entirety. Well, we have to clean up our telepathic interplay and make sure that it is truly purposeful. It must have been a very great responsibility placed upon the first C group, the telepathic communicators, from whose instructions arose the book Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle. Okay. Okay, now, other questions arise as well, based on DK's words and our own insufficient communication. Another question could well be, he says, what is the difference between this work, which I am suggesting to you, and the work of the Lodge of the Lords of Form? Well, we might say that we do expect there to be a significant difference, and maybe DK, his answer is surprising, I think, to many of us, because he says, what is the difference? None whatsoever, except in the motive and the point from which you must endeavor to work. The Lords of Form work entirely on or and from the lower levels of the mental plane, and with the energy of knowledge. Now, may it be said, that can be very dangerous and tends towards the separation of the concrete mind from the rest of the mental apparatus, the world of the concrete mind becomes a 13th sphere and a field unto itself. And DK regards this as a disastrous happening. So repeating, the Lords of Form, he says, work entirely on and from the lower levels of the mental plane and with the energy of knowledge. But let me say, not the energy of wisdom, which has to do with the method of real spiritual attainment. He goes on to say, the love aspect of the soul itself is inactive. And may I say, if we looked at the egoic lotuses involved, we would probably see inactivity in petal number 2, 4, and 6. Well, perhaps 2 and 4 definitely, and in the early days, and then increasingly as a result of their initiatory potential, we might find certain atrophy of the higher petals, at least with regard to those activations within the petals which are required for spiritual advancement. So the love aspect of the soul itself is inactive. And therefore, he goes on, from the angle and vision of the Great White Lodge, the motives are wrong, and the objectives are selfish ones. And this is true, says D.K., of both individuals and groups. Now, let's remember that we're dealing with very intelligent people. In many respects, more intelligent than we are. As D.K. has said, the heights or the reaches to which they can extend the concrete mind are truly amazing. But it's knowledge and not what that knowledge can bring of real spiritual attainment. I think we can. There was a man, what was his name? Well, he was a chiropractor. He had a lot of fifth ray. He even thought that his personality ray was the fifth. It had been so in his previous life. Now it was the seventh. And the personality ray of the previous life was in process of moving downward into the mind. He had a fifth ray mind. And that downward trend would continue in his next life. He would have the first ray personality, third ray mind, and a fifth ray brain. And DK, knowing the relationship between rays five and ray one, cautioned him about the danger for a spiritual occultist to have a fifth ray brain. One could see how much it would concretize everything in his life. So let us say that one of the main discriminations we have is between what is selfish and what is selfless. Because the lords of form are indeed workers, and maybe we might say tireless workers for their own objectives. And we will have them to contend with for a long time, until the judgment day, in the either the fifth round of this fourth chain or the fifth scheme round, which involves the entire planetary scheme. So, isn't it so that we always have to test out our motives? Yeah. Okay. And then he says a little bit about these lords of form. Forget not, he says, that these lords of form are souls, i.e. consciousnesses, of great age and unique blindness. Well, what can we say there? That they come from the first solar system, the first major solar system. They are very old. They are old like the present solar angels that are tending to us. They are old like the nomads, the so-called wandering Jew, coming from the previous solar system to the present one. Now that's in a sense billions of years old, and depending on the accuracy of the chronology that we are given, they could be even trillions of years old, because solar systems tend to last in the trillions of years, both in their external and subtle development. These timescales, of course, dwarf any kind of timescale we can think of as relating to ourselves as human beings. But TK goes on to say, forget not, great age and unique blindness, but later on, he says, in some far distant cycle, one wonders whether it's going to be a cycle having to do with our particular solar logos. Okay? In some far distant cycle, and when karma has worked upon them, and the great law has exacted full payment for all wrong done, that they too will begin to develop the love aspect and to transmute their motives. Well, we don't know what that far distant cycle will be, but we have an idea that something along this line could begin to develop at the judgment day, in which they will play a strong role, and after which they will be banished from the rapidly developing earth, which is rapidly becoming a sacred place. Where will they be transported? It's hard to say, but Mars has something to do with the matter. Now, DK goes on to say, you too must work from mental levels. I assume he means, just as do the lords of form, but with certain exceptions. You too must work from mental levels, but knowledge and love must be called into play together, producing only those results which are harmoniously and intelligently in line with the divine plan. Well, ours is the Venusian approach, so to speak, blending knowledge and love so that wisdom is produced. And we might ask ourselves, is that the way we are working? DK goes on to say, disciples are not permitted to call into play and functioning activity the will aspect of the soul unless they are initiates of the third degree. Well, that's when the will in its initial phases is released. Maybe, may I say, we are learning something about the will up to that point. And as we enter the stage of accepted discipleship, but even entering the stage of discipleship, accepted discipleship, is still a long way off from the transfiguration of the third degree. DK goes on further, prior to that, i.e. prior to the third degree, prior to that, they seldom realize the distinction between the imposition of the will and the directed impression of ideas. Well, it is said that nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. But it's hard to apparently discriminate between the imposition of the will upon them, let us say, and the directed impression of ideas upon them. There is too much desire, and this is important, which is embryonic will in their equipment, for them to be trusted as yet with this higher aspect of mental activity. Well, when we speak of the word mind, we say, now you mind me, which means you obey my will. So it seems justified that Descartes named the will as a higher aspect of mental activity and desire as embryonic will. I would ask you, he says, to get clearly in your minds in connection with any telepathic work which these groups working under me should do, that it is the impression of ideas and not imposed direction, which is the group ideal, a very different thing, my brother. We sometimes think that the imposition of the will is being exacted from us, is working upon us. Rather, it's the impression of ideas which should be working. It's not so much an atmic tendency as a Buddhic tendency. But of course, once we begin to understand the source of ideas on the Buddhic plane, we recognize that the higher planes and cosmic planes also have their version of this. So there's a big difference here between the imposition of the will and the directed impression of ideas. You might also ask, the Tibetan says, how can this collective impressing go on and yet leave a man free? Okay, it's, we know that true freedom cannot be violated. It's against the occult law. And DK answers his own question, because it will be kept clear of all directed will force. And this means that the impressing agent will not force the issue, will not command, will not insist, will not demand, will not apply such a force as the agent impressed has no choice but to follow. Apparently, that's just not allowed. Maybe hierarchy could solve many issues all at once, apparently solve, by simply forcing the issue. But then, as DK is telling us, you would learn nothing by that process. And the same old problems would appear later because you had not dealt with them. You were simply forced along the way. So anyway, the question, he's talking about questions that are coming up when we begin to really, what should we say? Get into this mode of telepathic work. the questions will arise when the telepathic work has been in process. Okay. And here is yet another question. How do we leave a man free if he's impressed? And DK answers the question because it, the impressing, that is, because it will be kept clear of all directed will force. All that workers and disciples in my groups will seek to do is to impress certain minds with the outlines or suggestions as to the plan. And for a moment there, we have to ask, what is the word my doing there? Workers and disciples in my groups, does that mean that there is a greater forcing occurring in other groups? He seems to say along the way, no. But sometimes when you read Master Moria or the authors, the publishers' estimation of what Moria was saying, you get the idea. When I say jump, jump, when I say run, run, when I say this, do this, you seem to get that impression. But is it in the mind of the publishers and not really in what Moria would suggest? So anyway, the impressing will be kept clear of all directed will force. All that workers and disciples in my groups will seek to do, and of course, that includes us as teachers and lecturers and people who present a new point of view. All that these workers and disciples in my groups will seek to do is to impress certain minds with the outline or suggestions as to the plan. Then he goes on to say, these ideas will deal particularly with the concept that separation is a thing of the past, and that unity is the goal of the immediate future, and that hatred is retroactive and undesirable, and that goodwill is the touchstone which will transform the world. Not sure if I okay. Well, that's the gist of what can be suggested, what can be impressed without forcing. And there's maybe just a little more we can do here before I have to prepare, or at least get things ready. How then, says the Tibetan, can you keep your minds free from your own desires and from your own interpretations? May I say, those interpretations probably being beglamored and full of illusion and, in any case, limited when compared with the truth. And he suggests, by achieving that poised and positive negativity on the part of the two lower aspects of the personality, the astral body and the brain, as well as the etheric brain. And remember how he, a couple of programs ago, he divided them, divided man into two parts, the astral and the brain, and the mind and the soul. So these lower aspects of them, he says, these determine the reactions of our lower centers, particularly of the solar plexus center. And then he adds, the mind will then be left free to fulfill three functions. Now, that's as far as I find I can take it right now. And we will see what these three lower functions may be the next time we can get together and think together. This is page 65. You know, we're not accomplishing a lot in terms of many pages done, but okay. That's the way it goes. There's so much to think about carefully. Think with care. I'm trying to. Certainly not always succeeding. So anyway, this is the end of Program 28, and we are, goodness, we're in section 7. That's where we should be. I mean, part 7. Oh, no, this is, yeah, we've just finished 7, and we go to, from 63 to 65, and we're still in part 7, and we don't know the day when this resumes, but we will begin with page 65. If we can just hold our lower aspects, in a case of a condition of poised and positive negativity, keeping them from running away with the show, you know. That happens so much for so many people. Okay, friends, Tuya and I and all of our workers in the field of communications, Mikhail, Biel, Joe, Michael Stacy, and Bob Basil quite often, and others. We all wish you a lot of love and many blessings and the power to absorb with meticulous entirety that which DK has been suggesting. So we've done a lot now about the difference between the imposition of the will and the directed impression of ideas. We've done a lot there. And maybe, you know, sit down with yourself and think it through. Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now. Oh, and by the way, I think the next program will be program 29. I have to remember that, at least. Okay. See you soon.